Sports First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and we're simulcast on ESPN News. Kevin Connors in today for Jason Fitz on this Memorial Day. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Headlines here at the top of the hour. The UFC is instituting stricter coronavirus testing guidelines ahead of its return to Vegas this weekend. That's going to include two COVID-19 swab tests now, one when you check into the hotel, another following Friday's official weigh-ins. And good news from the world of basketball, Patrick Ewing is home from the hospital, and according to his son, getting better in his bout with COVID-19, the Hall of Famer and Georgetown head coach announced last week he is battling the illness. If you missed any of the show today, go check out the First Hour on Demand and the First Take Your Take podcast brought to you by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases. What's in your wallet? So we had the match yesterday between Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning and Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. And it, of course, was a great success. I mean, they raised $20 million for COVID-19 efforts. Tremendous job by Turner Sports for putting the broadcast on. Tremendous job by the country club that got it ready to host that event. Great job by all four guys involved. Michael Collins, our buddy, was on First Take this morning with Marcus Spears, Max Kellerman, Laura Rutledge. They gave their thoughts. And, of course, as you might expect, things got a little dicey.
Well, first the good. They raised $20 million for COVID relief. That's great. And this is the best version, as it turned out, of what this might have been, right? This was Super Friends. What if we put Batman and Aquaman and Superman all together, right? You get Super. Well, there's Tiger Woods. Look over there. There's Tom Brady. Goats everywhere you look, unless it's Peyton Manning. And it's rivals and all that. And turned out to be the best version of what it could have been. So that's the good. But at the risk of Santa Collins over here putting a coal in my stocking, I have to say, you know, if this would have happened when, you know, ESPN, we were talking about, hey, we're going to put horse on TV. Isn't that going to be great, everyone? And I was like, yeah, that will be great. I get to watch something. But since then, Ferguson and Gaethje have fought at UFC a real the highly competitive world-class fight, you know, in a world-class sport, to determine the number one contender in that division, really. And that turned out to be an excellent version of what it might have been. The weather's heating up. We're about to get to real sports. And so had this taken place 6 weeks ago, I'd have been much more enthusiastic. As it was a fun, you know, celebrity kind of party. And they were playing golf. And Santa, I'm sorry, I hope you don't put coal in my stocking, but, you know, it's not like Tyson Holyfield.
So this the kind of day it's going to be with you starting to show off hating on the fact that this was a great watch, and it was four dudes playing golf, and everybody is starving, and the fact that golf hadn't been played in a minute. Don't forget, Max, Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson were out there as well, playing golf. Two of the best to ever do it in the game. And I get it from an entertainment standpoint. To you, it might have been but to a lot of people, including myself, who is not a golf enthusiast, I'm like, yo, this is really, really dope to watch. And it brought out some of the psychology of who Tom Brady is as well. You got to learn some things. You got to learn some things as well about Tiger Woods and what he did not say. Tiger Woods wasn't very talkative. There was a competitive edge to Tiger that wanted to win this match. I think because we have grown so used to the fans following these guys, hearing the crowd roar, and all of those things, that it may have taken away some things from people. But if you are a sports enthusiast, if you were fanatic about seeing competition, there was some real live competition going on. Yeah, it was buddies. It was supposed to be fun. It was for a great cause. But you could tell when things got a little hairy, or the game got close, or Tom Brady and Phil start making a comeback, this turned into a situation where they wanted to win and everything else was outside of anything other than trying to get a W in this match.
Max Kellerman, in the spirit of Stephen A. Smith, since he's not on today with you, I will channel him as best as I can for you. Max Kellerman, have you lost your damn mind? Look, let's go back to the match part one. Barkley was there, Tiger was there, and Phil was there. And was that compelling when everyone was watching and it was on pay-per-view? No! This blew that out of the water. And you're talking about, well, UFC this and UFC that. Yes, UFC was real fighting, and it mattered, and it did. You know what? This wasn't supposed to be real golf. If you went into this thinking to yourself, I'm going to see some real golf being played like on the PGA Tour, well, you know what? That's your own damn fault. That's not what this was supposed to be. But what made this awesome was you got a guy who's in the top five in the world on course doing commentary, and he's talking smack to Charles Barkley, who's talking smack to Tom Brady, who then gets mad and hits the shot of his life, splitting his pants, stuff going everywhere. It wasn't supposed to be the competition that we're going to see on the PGA Tour. That's not what this This was entertainment for charity and doing something where, hey, man, what's Tiger Woods been up to? Because he ain't hit a shot in competition since February 16th. We ain't seen Tiger play golf since February 16th. And Phil Mickelson having fun, guaranteeing that there was going to be more smack talk than the first match, and it lived up to it. Plus some. Y'all can see, even out here with me today, Mother Nature trying to ruin this. And just like last time, when it comes to golf, Max, I got to school you again. Again.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, the reason Michael Collins is the GOAT on golf commentary, and I don't think it's close, is because you can make golf sound interesting, Michael. Look, the fact of the matter is, I understand the arguments. I'm not going to say I don't understand why people would be entertained by it if you are the type to be entertained by this stuff. I get that it was the best version of what it could be, and a guy's, and not just the guy, the GOAT's pants split and he hits 100 yards. I get it, guys. I understand. You're asking me, what did I think about it? Was I entertained? In theory, particularly, had it happened 6 weeks ago, the answer would have been a resounding yes. At this point, after having seen a real sporting event, gearing up to see more real sporting events,
Fun stuff. I'm with Michael in some ways that seeing Tom Brady humbled and Charles laughing in the background at Brady's struggles was great. And by the way, now's as good a time as any to say, if Tom Brady is an 8 handicap like we were told he was, I'm in the Wu-Tang Clan, all right? I mean, ain't no way Tom Brady's an 8 handicap based on what we saw yesterday. But I do credit Brady for teeing it up, knowing it was going to be a long day, and getting out there with two of the absolute legends of the game all time. It was unique seeing Tom Brady fail, something that hasn't happened in a long, long time. John from Memphis joining us on 888-SAY-ESPN. John, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm good.
John, what are your thoughts
on
the match?
What's that?
What were your thoughts on the match yesterday?
Well, I thought it was pretty good, but I would love to see, which I wish it could happen, but unfortunately it can't, would be Tiger Woods, Dennis Rodman, and the late, great Robin Williams.
Now, that's a threesome right there. Give me Dennis Rodman on the golf course, and I'd be curious. I think I'd be curious. Certainly the banter would be great. I'm not sure we get the golf that we saw yesterday. We appreciate the call, John. Jason from North Carolina has been hanging on. We were talking about Lance Armstrong earlier. Jason, you got some strong opinions on Lance, don't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, let me say that Lance very well is the most reprehensible figure since Ty Cobb. But having said that, we shouldn't have any sympathy for him, but I do think you have to understand that to be a cyclist during that period, I do think was different than being a baseball player during the steroid era, because 50, 60, I don't know what the percentages are, 70% of players probably use steroids. Whereas I think just to even be in the Peloton, to even hang on the back wheel of the slowest person of the Tour de France for 21 stages, I think you would hear people say that 90 some or 100% of cyclists were doping during that period. So it was a matter of, if you want to do this for a living, that was the price you had to pay. Now, it doesn't mean that you had to ruin people's careers, you know, for anybody that tries to call you out for something that turned out to actually be true. But so, I mean, he's a pariah in the same, for the same reason that Barry Bonds a pariah. Barry Bonds wasn't, you know, good to the media. He was difficult to get along with. Teammates, you know, didn't particularly like him. But meanwhile, Andy Pettit and repeated cheater A-Rod, you know, they're fine to come back into the sport, be commentators. Everybody loves them. And it's just because of the way they treated people. So, no, you know, Lance Armstrong doesn't deserve sympathy. But I do think it's different than baseball, because I heard you talking to the earlier caller about that. And that I do think you could make a living. You couldn't be at the top of the sport, with the exception of, you know, Ken Griffey Jr., everyone thinks was clean, Greg Maddux. There were still some all-time greats. But I just think to have it as a career whatsoever, I think you had to be doping in cycling, whereas you didn't necessarily have to, you know, in baseball.
It's a great call. You make a lot of good points there. Let me address a couple of them. Everyone was cheating, so I have to cheat too. I'll never buy that. I'll never buy that. But let's say for a minute that Lance gets to a point where that happened and he wins two or three. And at this point, he is an international star. At some point, stop living the lie. He had the exposure, the opportunity to out the whole sport and say, you know what? I've been doing something that's been wrong. I've been living a lie, but I've got an opportunity to turn it around. He didn't do that. And to your point, he continued to fool people. He ruined lives along the way. So you're absolutely right. Lance doesn't deserve any sympathy. Never should have. I hope he doesn't think he deserves sympathy at this point. Brian from Oklahoma wants to talk a little bit more golf. Joining us on the ESPN Hotline. Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good.
Well, so I thought it was interesting, the match. You know, and it's kind of like getting on Facebook and you kind of get sucked in and you can't turn it off or you can't stop scrolling through feeds. That's how it was for me. I enjoyed all their personalities, all the banter and back and forth. But, you know, I've got an idea for next time, because I think you can sprinkle something like this in from time to time. And it would be Tigers versus the Goats. Of course, the Goats, you could go with – it would be a two-man scramble, two-team, two-man scramble. You've got Tom Brady and maybe Wayne Gretzky versus Tiger Woods. And, of course, being here from Oklahoma, we'd have to throw in the Tiger King, Joe Exotic, on Tiger Woods' team.
I think, don't we have the issue of getting Joe out of jail first? Doesn't that have to happen, I think? Yeah, look, there's room to go with this, with other sports stars. I think that there's no question about it. We appreciate the call. Hey, tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Team Tiger, literally. It's pretty good. Meantime, pivoting to college football, which of course is on the minds of just about every sport fan, because we're kind of getting closer to the start of things. Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M head coach and former coach of our own Marcus Spears, joined the First Take gang this morning to talk about the probability, possibility of a college season and how his team is preparing as they move forward.
First of all, we've had weekly staff meetings to try to keep up. And the thing is to be truthful about the information you're getting. And if we didn't have answers, we didn't tell them. But we said right now, you know, we're planning on coming back June 8th. Our freshmen that didn't report at midterm are actually coming in today. And we have testing for them. We have the temperature chest going in and out of the building. We have everything set up. So we're going to be able to monitor daily their temperatures, everything after the tests come back. They're doing their orientations in our upperclassmen are coming back next week for the majority part, most of those guys, and then they can start voluntary workouts on the 8th. And we got testing for everybody and everybody that's involved in the organization.
Coach, considering the uncertainty about even the near future, I presume you have multiple plans in place in terms of how to prepare for the upcoming season. How do you think this is going to play out? What do you think that's going to look like?
I think what we have to know is be prepared for the unprepared. It's just like you're coaching a game. I mean, I hate to say that scenario, but you have a game plan when you go in. They come in doing something different. Somebody gets hurt. You always have alternate plans. I think the main thing, again, is to rely on the information we have from our medical experts, rely on our government. We have a great governor in Governor Abbott and what we're trying to do there, and then rely on the information as far as what the kids and what's going on with the families are telling us, and be safe with the kids. And then we have a plan. I think, you know, the 8th, it looks like I would say around July, I think you'll start to get back to the normal summer activities and what's coming up. But we have a plan for that. We have a plan for middle July. We have a plan for if it's June 15th or whatever it was, which I don't think it will be now. We have plans for all those. But the main thing is we have to be safe and listen to our medical personnel.
Jimbo, listen, man, you know, being a head coach, obviously, I spent time with you. You know, once you the head coach of a big institution like you are, you become a part of the climate, and it goes all the way past just coaching the college football level. When you're on these calls about potential scenarios, who are all of the people that are giving input into whether a college football season will be played and what those parameters are? Is it, you just mentioned Governor Abbott here in Texas. Is it the ADs as well as presidents? Who's on these calls? Who is the committee that's having this discussion?
Everybody. You have presidents, you have ADs, you have the medical personnel of each school, you have the medical personnel above each school that are within the state and within the national information. And governors and Commissioner Sankey does a tremendous job of communicating with us coaches in the SEC. The information he gets to us is instantaneous. It's from the top. It's, you know, with whether it's from Washington DC or the medical experts across the country. So it's everybody that understands what's going on, not just in your own little cubbyhole or own little world, which I say, but the whole national perspective of what's happening.
Coach, you've been in constant communication with your players throughout all of this. I'm curious, have you heard any concern expressed from any players and their families about the idea of coming back to campus and going kind of full-fledged into a lot of this?
You know what's interesting? We actually have it. We actually have it in this regard, because what's going on, I mean, the families are trusting. We're getting the information. We tell them this is your choice during these voluntary times. We do not have to come back. We understand. But most of them are very anxious, and they realize that. And we've explained the things we have in place with testing. As soon as you get here, we have multiple tests that's going to be after. We have temperature checks coming in and out of the rooms and the workout rooms, and how they're cleaning them, and the spacing and the amount of people we're going to allow in. So we explain everything out and then let each individual family make that choice. And then you have questions all the time, which I've had my son. I have questions. I have questions as a coach, because before I present that information, Marcus will understand this from being on a staff with me. I had 10,000 questions, because first and foremost, the safety of your players, they're like your children. I don't care. You don't want to put them in harm's way. But you also have to trust things that when you're given the information, that's right, you go with it and you proceed forward.
Coach, a lot of different scenarios being discussed, including only playing conference games. What do you think is the most likely from what you're hearing? What do you think is the most likely scenario?
Honey, right now, I mean, everything is going this perspective. It's going to be a normal year. That we're going to have, you know, we're going to play the non-conference games. We're going to play the conference games. But like I said earlier in an interview, we're in unprecedented times. So I think we have to be prepared to do unprecedented things to create the best scenario from a safety aspect for our players, but also from getting this game to go on forward, because of the importance of college football and because of what college football not only means to the America, which I think we need, but at the same time to the other sports and the support it does for the surrounding area of a university and the other sports that are at a university. So we have to be prepared to do a lot of things, but first and foremost, safety will be there. But we have to do whatever, whether it's conference games, whether it's play no non-conference games, whether you have fans, you don't have fans. I mean, I think we have to have an open mind to do all those things.
Jimbo Fisher on First Take this morning. Look, it's going to be a week-to-week thing. It just is. But let's hope that we proceed cautiously and correctly, because, boy, it would be great to have college football back in the fall. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Commercial insurance through Progressive protects your business and your dream. Choose from over 30 coverage options at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Coming up, we continue to count down our primetime players list. We'll hear First Take debate whether they'd rather have James Harden or Steph Curry coming up.
Regular season MVP has never motivated me. To be the best, To be the best to ever play the game has motivated me.
We're counting down the NBA best with our first take primetime players. That's pretty interesting. Each day, we'll reveal and debate a player from our top 15 rankings as voted on by our ESPN NBA experts. Who's in? Who's out? Who's number one? You'll know I'll have something to say about all this. First Take NBA Primetime Players, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN.
ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Kevin Connors in today for Jason Fitz. And we move into the top five of our primetime player rankings. Why don't we find out who comes in at number five?
The fifth player in our First Take Primetime Players NBA ranking is Stephen Curry.
Thoughts are never in my head, or this should be another hot night.
A two-time MVP and three-time NBA champion. Steph led the NBA and made three-pointers in five consecutive seasons.
Curry, way downtown, bang, bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
The six-time All-Star also led the NBA in scoring during the 2015-16 regular season.
Steph Curry from downtown.
Player number five, Warriors guard, Stephen Curry.
Coming in at number five, and time now for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Whenever you get to this point of the conversation where it's really on the line and we're getting down to the elite of the elite, it is bound to cause and spark some great debate. And we got it between Marcus Spears and Max Kellerman this morning, debating who would you rather have. If you're starting a team right now, who would you rather have? Stephen Curry, or the guy who came in at number six on the list, James Harden?
Steph Curry, it's an easy answer. Look, forget about choking in the playoffs, and Harden has a history of it, although Steph did a little too. He came around in this last postseason, but he was the conductor of a colossal choke, you know, 0 points in the greatest half-court offense conducted by Steph in the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter in a game seven at home to try to get to a 73 win to a championship. That was bad by Steph. And Harden has had moments like that too, by the way, and more of them in the playoffs. But I'm not even going to have to go to clutch performance in the playoffs to decide this one. Look, Mike D'Antoni can make a nice player like Jeremy Lin look like an all-star, a great player like Steve Nash look like an MVP, and a legit great player like James Harden look like an all-time great. In D'Antoni's system, James Harden is putting up Steph Curry numbers. I mean, he's leading the league in scoring, but he is. There's no higher usage rate than the primary ball handler in a D'Antoni system. Of course his stats were going to be goosed. That's what was going to happen. And it's not that he's not a terrific player. He is a terrific player, but he ain't Steph Curry. What, could you imagine if Steph Curry ran a D'Antoni system? But Steph is just a more accurate shooter than James Harden, period. Well, let's talk about what Steph's in the conversation for all-time best. He has one of the best handles you've ever seen. And he's the greatest shooter of all time, and that is a deadly combination. Then you add in the fact the kind of culture that he helps create, the fact that he can get all his points and do all that with the ball not sticking with him. It's not like he's a black hole, that's it, everyone else is standing around. The ball doesn't stick with Steph Curry. Of all the superstars, it sticks with him by far the least. Unlike James Harden, I'm not just talking about assist number, guys. I'm talking about hockey assists. I'm talking about moving the ball. Steph is just better. So if Steph had the usage rate for a coach like D'Antoni, we wouldn't even be arguing this. But as is, apparently we have to. Of course, Steph is better than James Harden. That's why all three of us would take him to start a team before we took Harden.
No, he's not. And no, we wouldn't. Because I wouldn't. I'd take James Harden to start a team over Steph Curry. Steph Curry has limitations. They're obvious. He has limitations. James Harden is a better scorer than Steph Curry is. Now, you want to talk about shooting? That's obvious. But if I need somebody to get me buckets, it's going to be James Harden before I give Steph Curry the opportunity to get buckets. You think about D'Antoni's system. So do we accumulate that with every great player? player? Do we say Jordan ain't Jordan without Phil? Or Kobe ain't Kobe without Phil? Or you put any great player in a situation with a great coach, it's going to highlight their talents. That's what coaching Jordan is. James Harden is doing. James Harden is doing this at a clip. James Harden has led the league in scoring the last 3 years. And I get it, Max. I understand usage and all of that. But don't you think the other teams know that? Don't you think coming in night out that every defense that James Harden is playing against knows that the ball is going to stick with him? And, oh, by the way, he's averaged more assists. You know what else he's done? He's outperformed Steph Curry in the series that they played each other when you talk about points per game. Look. Taking nothing away. They're both great players. I played basketball, and I don't want to get all into that. I'm going to tell you what I see in my eyes as a fan. If I need a bucket getter, and I say, out of these two basketball players, who's the best one that you think it is James Harden for me, based on everything that he does.
With the money on the line?
He can dribble it, facilitate it. Not just shooting, Max. I'm talking about a game. I need this guy over a long period of time to perform at a high level who's going to get me to the point where I can win the game. It's going to be James Harden.
Fun debate this morning. And by the way, Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less only at Walmart. I love Spears. I think he's got one of the most refreshing voices on talk, TV, and radio. I'm with Max on this one, man. Like, I think Steph is underrated. Coming in at 5 in the NBA, I still think we continue to forget how great that dude is. 2-time MVP, 3-time champion. Led the NBA in scoring 4 years ago. Greatest 3-point shooter in the history of the league. Now, are the numbers James Harden puts up outstanding? There's no question about it. You can weigh in with your opinion. Who would you rather have, James Harden or Steph Curry? Give us a call, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Over the last 5 seasons, and it's tough to sort of evaluate this year because Steph was injured so much, but over the last 5 seasons, James Harden shooting 44%, Steph shooting 47%. That matters. I feel like comparing Harden's points per game numbers to Steph is like comparing the passing numbers of Matt Ryan and Tom Brady. Well, Matt Ryan's going to have gaudier numbers because they throw it more. They just do. But who would you rather have? I'd rather have Steph Curry. Because at some point, winning matters too. And I feel like we get a little selective when it comes to discussing winning. Like, winning matters so much when we're evaluating the greatest players of all time, but then when we want to sort of shape our argument a certain way, winning doesn't matter that much. Well, he's on a better team. Are the Golden State Warriors a better team than the Houston Rockets? There's no doubt. But then let's acknowledge that Steph makes his teammates better than James Harden does. And again, this isn't a referendum on James Harden and the player he is. He's obviously an elite NBA player. Perennial All-Star, future Hall of Famer, one of the best scorers in the NBA. But Max made the great point, and he said it so well. He said, the system with which James Harden plays, the Mike D'Antoni system, created a good player in Jeremy Lin and made him a potential All-Star. And it took a great player in Steve Nash and it made him a 2-time MVP. And it's taken a great player in James Harden and made him one of the best players on the planet. But so is Steph Curry. And again, I've seen Steph perform in the NBA Finals and win championships. That's happened. And he's done it under adverse conditions as well. And Harden has the ball in his hands so much. Every offensive possession, Steph doesn't have the ball in his hands that much. Steph works without the basketball and still has the same impact. That's why I'd take Steph Curry. Alan from Georgia joining us on the line. And Alan, I get the sense that you have a different opinion.
Well, I probably didn't catch the last few seconds of what you were saying, but the question that I got was, would I take Harden? Who would I take, Harden or Curry? And I would take Harden any day.
Probably not for the last shot.
I would take Steph, but all the way around the board. Other than that, give me Harden.
So let's follow this logic here. So you think James Harden makes his teammates better than Steph Curry does?
I mean, that's a toss-up, but Curry's already playing with great players. I haven't seen Harden play with a ton of great players.
He's got Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, he does. Right now he does. I mean, other than that, you can't really name anybody. Or he's had Chris Paul, but I wouldn't be able to. I'd have to take the athleticism. I always go with the bigger, stronger, faster guys.
Steph's won championships, and Harden hasn't. Now, again, I will acknowledge that Golden State has a better roster, but I'll also tell you that I think Steph makes those teams better by being on them. He makes his teammates better. At some point, doesn't winning matter at some point with what Steph has done?
Well, Harden wins, though. They win. I would definitely say, and I'm not going to ever say nothing bad about Curry as a player. I would check him, too. It's hard to really pick between the two, but I always go with the bigger, stronger, faster guys.
Right. No, and you make a great point. Look, this is where in the discussion it gets to, we're talking about levels of greatness, and we're splitting hairs. They're both amazing players. But for me, I'll take the guy who's got the better resume and the more of the winning resume. Mike from Texas. Mike, how are you today?
I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you? You taking James Harden or Steph Curry?
I'm taking Steph Curry. There's no way I would take James Harden over Steph Curry, and I'm from Houston, Texas. Steph Curry is just, he can do more, come off the pick and roll. James Harden has to be a one-on-one player. You know, he has to have the ball in his hand. Steph doesn't have to have the ball in his hand. Steph can have the ball in his hand and beat you. He can isolate you and beat you. He can come off the pick and roll and beat you. He can beat you from a three-pointer. His handles are right there with Kyrie. He can take you to the hole. He's just a better all-around player. The last couple of seconds, I would give it to Steph. I wouldn't give it to Harden.
And Mike, that's a great point. I mean, that to me is the consensus. If you're having this discussion with most people, they'll say, well, end of the game, I'll take Steph Curry. If you're starting a team tomorrow, shouldn't that weigh into the decision? This guy's the best shooter in the history of the NBA, Steph Curry. He's won 3 championships, 2-time MVP. And I know Harden, I'm not diminishing Harden's game. When you get into these discussions, people start saying, well, you're diminishing. I'm not diminishing James Harden at all. I just feel like we've seen Steph's body of work, and we've sort of, he's had a nice career. This guy's had one of the great careers in a long, long time. 3 championships already, 2 MVPs. I miss the NBA. I'm just saying it right now. I miss the NBA. These nebulous debates will only take me so far. More First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio coming up. We'll switch the discussion to the NFL. Onside kicks might be getting replaced soon, but with what? The fascinating proposal coming up next. We're back on First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and simulcast on ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Kevin Connor's in today for Jason Fitz. And did you see the interesting discussion that the Philadelphia Eagles are having, proposing a rule change which would, in effect, replace the onside kick? The alternative would be one offensive play from a team's own 25-yard line, in essence a 4th and 15, whereby if you convert, you keep the football, 1st and 10, and you can work your way down the field and potentially get into field goal range, or if you need a touchdown, go from there. That's an interesting proposal, which would replace the onside kick. By the way, if you missed any of the show today, go check out the second hour on demand and the First Take, Your Take podcast brought to you by Eno, the Capital One assistant that catches things that might look wrong with your credit card, sends an alert to your phone, and helps you fix them. What's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details. The onside kick potential rule change was discussed by Dominique Foxworth, Max, and Marcus.
here is it goes to 21%, around 23% is what fourth down conversion, fourth and 15 conversion rates have been since 2001. The problem with that is I suspect that it will go up. Once people realize that it will be an integral part of the game, they'll design plays for it and it'll go up. So, Max, your point is valid. It'll be more exciting at the end of the game. But to Marcus's point, that makes the whole rest of the game a little less exciting because there's less pressure on you to build up the lead that you need to protect it. Each play before that play will matter less if we know that it's easier for you to come back. So those big moments early in the game that we all get excited about because we know this one moment in the third quarter is going to be definitive, we're like, eh, maybe it won't be that definitive. Maybe I'll go get some chips because I know that we'll get that fourth and 15 conversion, our onside conversion later on in the game. So, I mean, I understand your argument, Max. I like the idea because 6% is way too low for onside kicks. We need to figure out the way to make it better, but I'm not sure that 15 yards is enough, especially once offensive coaches and referees, frankly, start to focus on this play and design plays that are meant to get you that yardage because there are no plays in the playbook right now for fourth and 15.
Look, if to satisfy you, make it 18, make it 20. If you want to get the sweet spot of like around 20% or 18, 20% recovery, okay, fine. But I want to address, but I don't even think you need to do that. I want to address your point about what about the first three quarters? You're cheapening the drama, right? No, what you're doing is making points cheaper, meaning you need to score more, meaning that these cowardly head coaches who for decades and decades would give away 25% of their possessions just to avoid a negative outcome on fourth down, right? Like, you know, it's the third and six. Well, let's, you know, we're gonna punt. Why? Go for it. Okay, now you have created conditions that incentivize running up that score. No question about it, because you need to build a lead, because no lead is safe. And in terms, Marcus, of, well, the best team doesn't always win, basically, that's the argument. You should have been doing what you should have been doing the first three quarters, right? Why give you a get-out-of-jail-free card?
Robust debate between Max and Dominique Foxworth this morning on First Take. What we didn't play was Max citing a number that I'm assuming is true, where he said right now, under the current rules, teams have a 6% chance of recovering an onside kick. I mean, more people land on the surface of the moon than recover onside kicks in the NFL these days. For me, I love this rule. I love this proposal. You think this wouldn't add insane drama to NFL games? Now, does it hurt the team that's leading the game late in the game? Of course it does. But does it keep fans in the seats late? Does it maintain TV ratings? You're darn right it does. Fun stuff today on First Take, Your Take,